All right, second hour here on Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie and Rexroad, proudly sponsored by Chuck McDowell Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser producing, Robbie Stanley off today, PK, Paul Kaharski in for him. And we've also audibled this week with Charles Robinson, who tells me he's on a plane tomorrow during his normal time. So today we're getting Charles. So Charles, you haven't just been like hanging out in Vegas for like four extra days, right? I mean, if you have, yeah. I got mad respect for that. Mad respect, like, if that's the case.
No, I did stay an extra day because I foolishly waited until like a week before the Super Bowl to book a ticket, and flying in was like, you know, because you go in a full week before. I think flying in was like $200, and then flying out was like $1,000. And so I got the, why did you wait so long to book your flight out? So I ended up staying an extra day, and I actually flew out yesterday afternoon because it was significantly cheaper. But I swear I just slept most of Tuesday. Vegas Super Bowl, I expect it will end up in the rotation, the league's rotation. Like, I always feel like there's a rotation of cities where they would like to visit most. And to me, it's like Miami, New Orleans, used to be San Diego. Obviously it's not anymore, but you know, LA I think is one. And I think they'll probably punch Las Vegas in there just because of, I think the popularity of the game, the number of people who showed up, the sports books did really well. You know, I think the casinos weren't super happy because NFL fans who show up, it's a different kind of a betting crowd. You know, you don't have a ton of people hitting the blackjack tables. Instead, they all hit the sports books. So it's sort of a different type of profit for casinos. But I think all in all, they felt pretty good about, you know, how the Las Vegas Super Bowl went. Actually, interestingly enough, and I don't think anybody's reported this, most expensive average ticket in the history of the Super Bowl. I got the data yesterday from a couple of different places, and it ended up being the most expensive average ticket in the history of the Super Bowl. Like, I want to say, you know, like $9,000, between $9,000 and $10,000. So it was an insanely expensive Super Bowl to get into. The week itself was interesting. You know, if you were there, when you hit Friday, Vegas was gridlock. It was like a parking lot. It was crazy. You couldn't go anywhere. I had to get to a site that was about a mile away from my hotel on Saturday. And, I didn't have a lot of time. So I jumped in an Uber and it said like 13 minutes, right? It was an hour and like 10 minutes in Uber to go a mile. And I was like, yeah, this probably, we could have figured out the transit a little bit better. But all in all, I think it went pretty well for Vegas. And, you know, from an entertainment value standpoint, I think people had a lot of fun. And then if you get an overtime game in the Super Bowl, nobody's complaining about that.
Well, real quick before we get to the game, Charles, you're talking about the rotation. I personally fully expect, but I don't know, that down the road here, as they build this new stadium here, that Nashville is going to be not just a place that gets a Super Bowl, but I think a place that, and I'd like your thoughts too, PK, a place that'll be in that rotation too somewhat regularly. You guys agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another city that, but as you said, you know, it depends on infrastructure, but you get a new stadium and then it's a game changer, I think, for Nashville, but it fits the template. They don't want, when it comes to the, you know, the Super Bowl, they don't want to have a bunch of cities in there where it's going to be inclement weather problems, you know, things like that. I think as long as you can illustrate that, A, you're willing to lean into infrastructure, which is to have a new stadium, B, you can figure out the transit, and, you know, C, there's enough opportunity to spread it out a little bit. That was the one thing about Vegas, is very compact, which was interesting. You know, and in some ways that's good, but then you kind of have the gridlock from a travel standpoint. I don't think they're overly worried about that, especially if the entertainment options are there and the partnership options are there. Whereas, you know, like Nashville, look, the draft, I think that to me, they look at the draft experience in Nashville and they're like, God, that was great. Right. You know, it's one of the best drafts in the history of the game. Weirdly enough, I think the draft's travel ability is, I don't want to say they factored in massively, but I think they do look at the draft and they're like, look, we can plan a draft somewhere and it goes really, really well. Why not consider that potentially being a Super Bowl rotation city if, again, the sort of location and the weather aspects really fit? They don't want to do a lot of, having been in the Minneapolis Super Bowl, I can tell you the Minneapolis Super Bowl, when it was in New York a few years ago, even like Dallas.
Well, they lucked out in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did, right. New York, they lucked out. But I think they're smart enough to know that those are sort of the one-offs. You know, they don't want to do that a ton. You know, they really want to have a consistent rotation of, you know, five, maybe six max, and then occasionally still leverage moving it into cities for certain reasons. They use, obviously, infrastructure. It's still the carrot, I think, for a lot of cities and ownership groups that, hey, you know, if you're willing to build a new stadium or, you know, do the things that we feel are necessary to make you a top tier, a top echelon, you know, team during a regular season and over a period of decades, we're willing to sprinkle in a Super Bowl now and then. Which is why, by the way, you're going to see Dallas, you're going to see LA, between Stan Kroenke and Jerry Jones. They're constantly harping on the league. Let's make sure we're getting a Super Bowl every, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
I think 70% of the people in Nashville could be within 2 miles and be foot traffic. But I think if you're in the 30%, that's outside, it'd be a hellish experience. So, that's a win. For those 70%, it'd be phenomenal.
I agree.
The draft was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a trade-off. It really is. It's even the Vegas one, the team hotels were like, what, 25 miles off the strip. And it was funny because we all kind of initially complained about it. And then once we kind of saw what the traffic situation was going to be as the week progressed, I was like, oh, I get this. Like, you don't want this situation with teams anywhere near the strip or, you know, needing to go anywhere near the strip after pretty much Wednesday of the week. It was pretty awful. But as you said, having that ability to be within 2 miles of really where everything's going on, I actually decided that Saturday after I dropped things off, I was like, all right, you know what? It took me an hour and 10 minutes to drop this off, you know, and go to this other casino. I was like, I'll just walk it myself the way back. And I think it was 1.4 miles I walked. But it gave me the ability to see, okay, let me see how fans are getting around. It was insane. I mean, there was a gazillion fans. Everybody was walking it. Everybody was on the strip. Everybody was going in and out of, you know, hotels, every other thing there. And that, to me, was really the illustration of where it had gone right, because almost everybody inside of like a 1 square mile radius was on foot and they were going in and out of everywhere nonstop from basically, you know, the break of dawn on Saturday until the game on Sunday. It couldn't have gone any better for Vegas.
So quickly, just your biggest takeaways from this game, like maybe the three biggest things, because obviously, I mean, I've been annoyed with a lot of this Shanahan discourse this week,
which
I think is hyperbolic as hell, and we can get into that a bit later. But what's the big two, three things that you take from this?
Well, first off, you know, Reed coming out afterward and saying he's not going anywhere. You know, that the whole week we talked about this, he wouldn't really answer the question. I think for this to hold together for Kansas City, because we talk about Mahomes and the Brady chase and like how much can the Chiefs maximize this, as much as it is, let's see how long Mahomes and Kelsey can stay together. Well, it's definitely Reed and Mahomes. How long can these two guys stay together? And I would look at the last play of the game where they run that corn dog formation again, which is the same thing they ran last year against Philly. The little slight alterations, but you know, Reed basically saying, you know, we're going to go back to a play we used last year, which is basically a motion with a wide receiver that forces DBs to change coverage at the last second and then take advantage of that and confuse them. That's really why they scored a touchdown and won the game at the end, running the same play that they had the year before. And it, in a weird way, shows, not even a weird way, it just shows the genius of Reed saying, hey, this worked. You know, we're in a pressure situation. The Niners probably are not thinking about this in this moment. And, you know, so I think one was Reed saying he was coming back. I think number two to me over the course of the week, it was just how Mahomes was. Like, I'm like, the whole week he seemed bored. Like, I don't, like, not in a negative way, just like a, I've been here so many times. Like, if I'm not here, I'm in the AFC title game. Like, it just was not too big for him at any point. And you're like, wow, already? He's sort of at this weird Brady moment where it's just like, all right, come on, let's get to the game. Like, I know, yeah, it's a Super Bowl. I'm always here. I feel like I'm always here. It's just such a tremendous advantage, I think, for the Chiefs. And then, you know, as you said, the 49ers, we can talk about this later. I thought what stuck out is just sort of seeing Kyle Shanahan once again in these situations to make decisions and not necessarily knowing whether or not he's going to make the right decisions or not, and how that reflects against the Chiefs, where I just think they're in this mode so often that we should talk about roster attrition with them, but if roster attrition doesn't strike them down, there's no reason to feel like the Chiefs are going to fall flat on their face unless something weirdly and unexpectedly catastrophic happens to a Patrick Mahomes, to a Steve Spagnuolo, to an Andy Reid. I hate to say it, but I almost feel like the Chiefs are better set up for continued dominance than even the Patriots were when they had the 10-year like gap for Brady after he won his third. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle this offseason moving forward. But it's hard for me to continue to question them after this was clearly their toughest situation, their toughest roster to deal with. And yet you look at who they beat, Miami, Baltimore, San Francisco, to win this title. It's just a joke.
We'll be back with more from Charles Robinson. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow night. Vanderbilt women's basketball takes on Texas A&M on the road. Pre-game 7:45, tip-off at 8, with coverage also available on 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Show. We got Charles Robinson for another segment. Paul Kaharsky, you have a question?
Not that the summer won't be filled with this share of Jordan versus LeBron conversation, but will Brady versus Mahomes edge in on it now?
I think it should, you know. I think it's a worthy conversation now, you know. He had to win his third in 6 years as a starter, and it's funny to me that everyone makes the comparison to Jordan. Oh, he's Jordan. You know, Mahomes is Jordan. But to me, the way I looked at it, I even wrote this. I said, this feels to me like Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, right? Like Brady wins that seventh and it's like, he's Nicklaus, you know, with what was it, 18 majors. And you're like, that's some, you know, uncatchable. There's no way anybody's ever going to be able to do that. And then Tiger came out of the gate and just won so many in his first few years as a professional. And that's how I look at Mahomes. I'm like, this guy came out of the gate. It's insane. The fire that he had. Now, that said, what, he wins his third, a little over 28 years old. I think Tom won his third, a little over 27, like 28 and a half versus 27 and a half, something like that. And then what happened was Tom had that big, huge gap year where you saw, it was for multiple reasons. Obviously, he had the knee injury, but there were a lot of assistants that were hired away. Everybody dove in on the Patriots program and started pulling out players. They started pulling out assistant coaches. They didn't have the greatest offensive drafts for a period there. There were a lot of different reasons why Tom had sort of that decade gap of, you know, not winning a title. And that's the challenge now. I think for Mahomes, it's the challenge now for Kansas City to lose players, lose coaches, and figure out how to adapt to it. Now, Chris Jones, right? You're probably going to lose a transformative defensive tackle who's probably got a couple years of prime left. You know, I think on the market there's going to be some teams this offseason that'll say, hey, you know what, 3 years of guaranteed money for that guy, $75 million, you know, dollars that we're looking at committing to him over that span guaranteed. You lose him. I think you got a multitude of other guys. Willie Gay. I mean, there's a few others. They'll probably keep L'Jarius Sneed, the corner. they got to make some decisions here, basically, to keep some guys and let some guys go. And then Kelce after the game, interestingly enough, you know, he talked about, you got asked about, you know, he coming back next year. There's been some beyond just the Reed rumors of like, is he going to, you know, come back? There's also been some talk about maybe Kelce getting to the point where he's starting to think about the end of his career. He wouldn't commit to it. I wouldn't put a ton into that, but I think it's interesting that he, you know, I actually asked, I was the one who asked Reed. I was like, you coming back next year? And he was like, he's like, well, yeah, you know, he had the qualifier. I haven't really thought about it yet, but yeah, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be back. And, you know, Kelce didn't even give that. So you start to think about, all right, when Mahomes gets coaches taken away from him, eventually at some point Reed, when he gets players taken away from him at some point, Kelce, what's the adjustment ultimately look like? And that's going to factor into to the Brady, you know, conversation. It's still, even 3-6, it's still extremely hard to win a whole second Montana career, right? Win four more Super Bowls just to tie Brady. And let's extend it out. Let's say he's going to play until he's 40. Okay, well, that's, you know, 4 and 12 years. Pretty hard. Anybody who wins 4 and 12 years, you're like, okay, that's a Hall of Fame career. He's already had a Hall of Fame career in 3-6. So it's going to be a lot of fun to see, you know, whether they can keep it together. But I'll tell you what, the pressure is on their personnel department now. The pressure's on, you know, the cap guys now, because they're going to have to deal with a contract that's not as bad as it could potentially be moving forward with him. I think he'll be one of those give back guys where he'll adjust along the way to add talent. But it will never be on the level of Brady, where probably the most undersold piece of Brady's story over the course of his career was that he rarely, if ever, maximized the amount of money he could make, and that allowed them to keep a lot of talent. I, you know, even with Patrick Mahomes being a give-back guy, it's never going to be on the level of Brady.
Yeah, and if Mahomes is this excellent and he wins like 5 or whatever, he still will have a clear. This is my whole, we won't even get into it, but like the whole Montana is clearly like top 3 because he has the 4 rings, I reject out of hand, but we don't need to get
it. It never gets to Jordan, because Jordan didn't lose in the title.
Well, Montana didn't either.
Right.
So Jordan also had easier competitors in the 90s than the great teams of the dynasties of the 80s. So,
right, but that's why Brady, to me,
which beat the crap out of Jordan, by the way, in his prime. I mean, we don't need to do this, but we could do this.
Yeah, and it makes, honestly, it's the phone lines usually light up when you start talking about any of these guys and comparing them. But again, like, to me, that's why I go back to Tiger and Jack.
That's I like that comparison. I like that.
We were like, he's going to do it. He's going to make this run. Like, it was so clear it was going to happen. And then what happened? He got a little older.
Personal stuff, mostly,
I mean, look, other things set in. Like, there was a lot, you know, like, hey, next thing you know, they're like, the windows of an SUV are getting smashed out by golf clubs. There's like a whole other side of, like, what happens down the stretch. Physically, he changes, right? Becomes a bigger guy. There's more torque in his swing. All of a sudden, he's having knee troubles, back troubles. That's why Brady is so crazy, because when you look at the expanse of his career, he played forever and really only had 1 year that was dinged by health when he had the knee injury, which changed how quarterbacks were officiated in, you know, hits below the knee. And it's just so rare to see any player last that long. And by the way, another thing too, financially, I'll bet by the time he's 35, Patrick Mahomes will be, I mean, his net worth on and off the field together might be $1 billion by the time he's 35. And I truly believe that does factor into how players kind of look at themselves in the game, because as it starts to wear on and you have all that money in the bank, you're like, how much longer am I going to put my body through this? And what am I really chasing? And it just becomes harder to chase that. But I'm with you guys when you talk about Jordan and just, you know, the overall dominance of Jordan because of the era he did it, the fact that he never really lost one, the fact that he took, you know, there was time in the middle where, you know, he dropped out. Now, let's be honest, I don't think the Rockets win those 2 titles if Jordan stays in the league those 2 years. But even when we watched The Last Dance, we saw the pressures that happen late in your career with teammates disagreeing, just the overall grind of it, mentally the toll that it takes. as hard as it is in the NBA, I think it's even harder in the NFL because you have so many other players on that roster, so many other teams, and then a league that I think even more than the NBA is just hell-driven at disassembling dominance. Like every single year, you know, you go into an offseason where you just want people taken off of a championship roster to try and force that team back in the middle.
Michael Jordan, 1-3 in playoff series against the Detroit Pistons, for the record.
No, I love that. Thank you. Thank you.
That's right. That's right. All right, real fast, Charles, to close here. Kyle Shanahan, the overtime thing. I mean, I'm here, people are sitting here talking about, like, amazing coaching gas, all this stuff. I mean, by every angle I can see it, it's a very 50-50 proposition. But I don't know. Is he taking too much crap?
I think he's taking too much crap from the standpoint of, like, I talked to somebody on their staff on Monday, and it was clear, even though Shanahan ducked it, like, their defense was really gassed. And this guy was like, look, he's like, go back and look at it. He was like, Bosa was completely gassed at the end of the game. He's like, we had multiple guys who were just wiped out. And he's like, look, if the analytics, it's close enough at that point, you don't want to throw those guys back on the field against Mahomes in that situation and basically feel like there's a really high percentage chance we're going to have to match a touchdown at this stage. So let's get out in front of it, keep the defense off the field. And then, you know, obviously, ideally, they would have scored a touchdown on that first drive. But, you know, I think people are underplaying the time that they were able to rest the defense in that scenario. And I get the straight up analytics, you know, aspect of it. I get the idea of knowing what you're going for by taking it second and overtime. You know, the Chiefs score a touchdown, then, okay, now you know you have to score a touchdown to match it. I understand all that, but I do think there's an in-game decision that has to be made, and maybe people aren't. And by the way, Shanahan also could have come out after the game and been like, look, I get all the analytics, guys, but we have human beings on that defense. It had been a tremendously difficult run down the stretch for those guys, and you know, we wanted to give them as much of a blow as possible. He didn't do that to take heat off of himself. He pretty much did the opposite. You know, so he deals with it in the wake of it. But, you know, it is what it is. I think he can be criticized on one hand. I think we're being realistic on the other hand, too, and understanding the game. The percentages were probably a lot closer than people want to say. But it's Mahomes, too. Like, that's the crazy thing is, like, how many times is this guy – you know, Sean McDermott's going to be on the hot seat because of Mahomes. I don't think Shanahan's going to be on the hot seat, but he's going to hear a lot, you know, next year because of Mahomes. Like, this is going to be, again, sort of like the Jordan effect, where how many people should have won titles or were in, you know, position to win titles, but they didn't because this guy existed. It's like Brady. How many people over the expanse of his career should have had more rings than they did, but he exists. He's able to do what he can do. And then, you know, he's paired with Reed, and it's a level of perfection with Kansas City that breaks other staffs in moments like that. And, you know, you just got to kind of deal with it. But I don't think we should just destroy Kyle over it. I mean, it was given where the defense was at that point. I understood the decision that was made.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. Thank you for adjusting, my friend, and we will talk to you next week.
Safe travels. Thanks.
Absolutely, guys. Take care. Have a good week.
Too. Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports. And when we come back, we will react to a bit of Charles. And I don't know, people are still screaming at PK about the Pecorine statue, too. I guess we can get back into that, too. Robbie Rexha, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.